amplifier votre passion pour la guitare pour quelques euros par mois. Rendez-vous sur lachaineguitare.com. Amplify your passion for the guitar for a few dollars per month. Head over to theguitarchannel.biz. Welcome to the Guitar Channel. I am super happy to welcome you a new interview. I have on the other side of the Skype connection the one and only Doug Aldrich from Los Angeles, California. Doug, how are you doing this morning?
Doing good, Pierre. Nice to see you, man.
What's the situation at the moment for you in Los Angeles because of the crazy pandemic we are going through?
Well, it's interesting because we're under a, you know, kind of a lockdown situation, mm-hmm. but it's not fully being done. People are still going out and doing things, not at restaurants because restaurants are closed and bars are closed, but people are still going on bike rides and walking around and exercising, stuff like that. So it's interesting. Los Angeles is doing very badly, actually, at the whole pandemic, and I've been really just basically home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I haven't really gone and done much. You know, just I would go to the store to get food or go to the studio to play, doing promotion stuff like this. But I don't go to any parties or anything. Dinners, nothing. Christmas was very quiet.
Mm-hmm. And what was and what is the impact of the pandemic on your life as a working musician? I guess all the tour was canceled and everything, stuff like that.
Yes, we had our record was meant to come out in April, and we had to push it back, obviously. And we've been spending this year has been so crazy because, you know, in the beginning we thought, like the whole world, it would be maybe 2 months, and then everything would be better, you know, and then. It kept getting worse and getting, then it got a little better in the summer, but now we're back in an even worse time with it. So it's been emotionally hard for a lot of people, you know, and especially music is very essential to people. So we've been trying, as the Dead Daisies, we've been trying to keep material flowing. While we had to hold off on the album, we've tried to release a single every few months. And you know, do some fun stuff for Facebook or for the band website, but it's been like a juggling act. So yeah. I'm at home with my family, and I've got to work. So it's, you know, I'm doing all this stuff. It's been a little challenging, but I can't complain. I've been I'm able to play guitar every day, so that's a blessing.
Okay, so we are going to talk about Holy Ground. So the album is going to be released on January 22nd. But before that, I would like to ask you some questions about the United Project Volume 2. You played on that yeah. album, that's French project. So how was it?
It was amazing. Yeah. I was very pleased that they asked me to be a part of it because, I mean, those guys are insane musicians. Those are the type of musicians that can play anything, mm-hmm. you know, and they're so talented. And I do one thing. That's it. You know, it's just, so I was surprised they asked me, and then I heard the music and I thought, wow, this is like incredible. It's going to be a real challenge for me because I'm not used to that kind of style, you know?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I practiced on it and I practiced a lot, and I got a basic, idea of what I want, how I want, like each solo that I did, I got an idea of how I wanted it to kind of start and how I wanted it to kind of resolve. And I worked on various ideas in the, you know, building the solo. And then in the end, I had to do it live because it was filmed at the same time. So I just, you know, I did a couple and I just picked one that I thought was interesting. You know, mm-hmm. maybe it had a lot of mistakes or something, but if it sounded okay, then that was cool. And plus, when you're doing jazz, there's not really as many wrong notes.
Yeah, right. So did you choose the song on which you were adding a solo? What was the process?
No, they had stuff that they asked me to play on.
Okay.
specific. So they sent me two songs, and each song had two solos, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. It was a lot of fun. It was definitely a challenge and in a good one, you know, a good way.
And it was a very, I think the album turned out to be a really good, and it was always interesting to have some super high caliber guitar player like you with some French guitar player, which also are playing super great, but it's good to have this kind of cocktail. So thank you very much for contributing to this project.
Of course. Thanks to them for having me. That was United. It was United Guitars. It's something that they do every year, I believe, and it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's the second year. And last year, Gus G was the international guest. There was also Rick Graham, I think. And Gus G was able to come to the festival they organized in February this year. So we don't know yet. They don't know yet if they are going to be able to organize a festival next year, but let's cross finger and hope for the best, and maybe it will be possible for you in your busy calendar to come and play at the festival. Who knows, right?
Well, if I'm available, I would love to come. For sure.
All right, let's talk about The Dead Daisy. So the album is called Holy Ground. How was it to have Glenn Hughes to work with you on the album?
It's been great. I mean, you know, we are, of course, when you change members, it's sometimes a little difficult, and it's nervous for the fans of the band. But if you're going to make a change, I feel like this was a perfect change. It was a drastic change. You know, it's like starting fresh with a brand new start, like a revolution. And we had gone and done really well with the last lineup. But as you probably know, the Dead Daisies is a roundabout of musicians, so there's always little changes coming and going, and it depends on people's schedule and what they want to do. And when I heard that Glenn was speaking with management, I thought, wow, that would be killer. You know, I didn't think of Glenn because he was busy doing his Deep Purple shows, and it just didn't occur to me. But then when they said we were talking to Glenn, I said that would be amazing. And it has been. I mean, me and Glenn have been friends for years. So it was very exciting for me.
Mm-hmm. And did you get to work on the song together, or were all the song ready and then Glenn came in? What was the process?
No, once Glenn came, they said, okay, we're thinking about Glenn. And I said, well, let me know when I can call him. And they called me a few days later and said, okay, give him a shout. And I called him, and I was like, this is going to be amazing. He's like, I'm really excited to work with you and again, because we had worked together. We had toured in Europe about 5 years ago, and had a great time on stage. I love Glenn, you know, as a person and a player and singer. So we all got together. Well, first we started to – I shifted my writing – because in with the Dead Daisies, the last version, we would never really finish an idea and bring it finished to the band. It would always be like better to just bring ideas, like sketches of things, and then we would work on them together in the same room. And that was how we did it for two studio albums. With this situation, it was definitely Glenn had ideas that he wanted to bring.
Okay.
So I felt like, okay, then that situation, I'm going to kind of take these ideas a little further. So I started to write with Glenn in mind, and it kind of naturally opened up some options that maybe we wouldn't have done before. As an example, the song Like No Other, the second song on the album, during the verses, the bass stops, and then Glenn singing it. And I probably never would have had a concept of that before, because I wouldn't have felt comfortable saying to Marco Mendoza, like, hey, when the verse comes up, just lay out, you know, don't play. But with Glenn, I knew that would be great, because you get this dynamic thing where you got two guitars on doing different things and the bass drops out, and I can envision Glenn, you know, owning that moment on stage. And then when it kicks into the chorus, bass kicks in and the chorus hook comes in, and it was really catchy. So that opened up things for myself and for David Lowy. And then Glenn had complete ideas as well, and his ideas were even more complete because they had melodies and lyrics, which I didn't present very much to Glenn. Definitely lyrically, he's he's a master with how he writes. So I would never, I mean, maybe I might say to him, you know, hey, I love how this song kind of, you know, makes me feel like this, and maybe that would inspire him to go further in that direction. But he brought in songs on acoustic, and he brought in Holy Ground, for example, and we demoed that up. And then when we went in to make the album, we kind of revisited it and changed a bunch of guitar parts and changed the tempo and simplified it. It's a kick-ass track, but the original demo, the original version was coming directly from Glenn, how he heard it. And then the version on the album is a compilation of everyone together working on it together, and then the producer polishing it into what it became, which is a really kick-ass opener. But I said to Glenn, you know, if you've got other ideas, why don't you and I make demos so that you can so it's easier to present them to the band. And he said, yeah, that's great, Doug, you know, come over and we'll do it. And we sat down and he started showing me a guitar part, and I thought, oh, that's really cool. And he's like, well, here, you know, let's demo this up. And I said, well, just to make this easy so that you are able to capture your idea the way that you want to hear it, let me just focus on recording and you just play guitar. So I would first thing we'd do is we'd find the tempo. Mm-hmm. And then Glenn would put down one guitar, and then just in a section, and then you go, that's the intro. And then I go, okay, let's double it. So we put another track and he'd double it. And then I'm thinking about this for the verse, or we might jump to the hook. Here's the hook riff. So then I would have him do that and double it to a click track. And then he would say, okay, well, this is areas of the verse. How long do you want it to be? And he'd be like, this feels pretty good. I go, okay, let's record it. We'd record that a little further down the session. And then we would take those chunks and move them into order how they were meant to be. And he let me help him with the arrangements and stuff, which is really good. And so what happened is that these demos with Glenn playing guitar and bass, and they didn't have any vocals, but I just programmed some really basic guitar, drums afterwards. So it's kind of like just basically started with the guitar. But Glenn, the way Glenn plays guitar is very unique. It's not like me. It's not like David. And it really had a really cool vibe to it that I wanted. He said, man, these guitars, can you, you know, when you go home, can you replace the guitars and make them in tune? And he goes, I'm rushing a little bit on this part. And I said, yeah, I can do that. But before I change anything, I got to figure it out. Even if it's a simple riff, mm-hmm. But there's a song called My Fate, which is one of them. And I love how he was, it just had a feel that, you know, it's, you're talking about two notes and you're talking about strumming it very simply, but depending on how you, you know, there's a lot of variation in how you can strum that or how you mute it. So it took me a minute to figure out how he was doing it so that I could cop that, because I wanted to maintain that feel. So yeah, to answer your original question, we all brought ideas and then we worked on them together. There was a couple songs that I brought apart and David Lowy brought apart, like Come Alive was one. Glenn, I said, hey, David and I have this song, but the riff we've already used for the, you know, for another song. So maybe, what do you think? And he immediately had a chord progression that and a melody for it. So it was like kind of immediate. Mm-hmm.
And did you keep some of Glenn guitar parts into the final record, or did you end up re-recording everything?
We ended up re-recording everything. There was some tuning things, mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, that's the trade-off. You know, sometimes when you're in the moment writing a song or doing a demo, it happens all the time with demos where you'll do something. I'm sure it happens with you. You'll record something and it's got a great vibe, but it's just a little bit out of tune, mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I gotta fix this, you know? And Glenn he's very particular about tuning. Like if it's out just a little bit, his ear it's bothersome. Mm-hmm. So I had to be really careful to make sure I was playing in tune, like on every song, every note, and also to maintain the feel of the things that I wanted to remember from his songs. obviously some stuff, you know, it was a no brainer how to do it. And I, and then there was room to expand, like with Holy Ground, as I mentioned. I just wanted to, instead of having the exact same riff going through the, all parts of the song, I wanted to have a little bit more of a tighter kind of a little bit, not as, like the intro is very big and open, and then during the verses, same kind of notes, same kind of riff, but it's more tight, muted, and it has a nice contrast to the chorus. So those things I was able to just, I could just do.
Mm-hmm. What is usually your process to compose a song? Does it start always the same way? Is it a chord progression, a riff on the guitar, a melody, a song title? How do you do it?
Well, I learned from David Coverdale a long time ago that inspiration could be anything. It could be a vocal line. It could be just a lyric. And once I started to get my mind wrapped around that after working and writing with him so much, I would start to almost sometimes envision a song that I wouldn't have an exact riff or a chord progression in mind, but I would think like, I'm wondering about this type of a drum beat, this type of a groove in my head, like a, you know, something like that. And then I would say, I'm envisioning out. And you just see what I did. I just sang, there was no chords. It was just like three hits over that drum beat. And then when it gets to the verse, I want to make it have a 16th note. And maybe I want the drums to straighten out. So I could conceptual, and then the chorus, I want it to be big open chords and big. And I wanted the chord progression to be melodic. So those are my plans. And then I would sometimes sit down and figure out a chord progression with those three chords that sound good together. Obviously, choking it down into a 16th note in the verse, you can have it modulate or just keep it on the static root note. And then maybe if you're lucky, you could build it right into a chorus as a big melodic chorus, and you have to find the chords that feel and good for that. Other times, so you basically construct it in your mind, you know, sometimes. Other times, I'll just be playing and I'll play something like, ooh, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And I'll capture that onto iPhone or something, usually is the best way, because then you can email it to yourself and import it. And that's a lot of times where I'll say to Glenn or to anybody who I've worked with, is if you got an idea, send it to me and I'll stick it into Pro Tools and have that little crazy idea as a reference point. And then we can kind of, you know, go, hey, this is really cool. And then I hear a different, I hear a drum beat like this on there, and Glenn will go, oh, that's nice, I like that. And it starts to build that way. But then other times you'll sit and play a chord and you'll hear a melody in your head right away that you go, that's really cool, it sounds good. There was, I'm sure with Glenn, there's times when he would have a title of a song or maybe a lyric, and that kind of backs up into the music, and it'll make him think about, you know, what kind of music he wants to go with that sort of meaning. So there's no rules, to answer your question. I think, okay. You know, as a guitar player, generally it's when you're playing, you'll get an idea for something or you'd be inspired by something. There was, you know, times when I would be inspired by stuff that was not rock, you know, like maybe a hip hop thing or something or whatever. And then, but it inspires me. It would be like really cool the way that that artist was doing it and how they were presenting this hook, these hooks. It's all about the hooks, mm-hmm. You know? So yeah. The hip hop artist maybe did something. I'd be like, wow, that was cool. And then translate into a rock and roll thing.
Mm-hmm. The guitar sound on the record is massive. Can you explain a little bit how you split the guitar part between David, Lowie and you? Is that something you really plan out everything, or is it song per song you decided how to do it?
We didn't really have a plan. On the last lineup, we were working with Marty Fredrickson, and Marty said, I want you guys to record live, and I'm going to have David on this side, and I'm going to have you on this side, and we're going to make a real straight-up kick-ass rock record. And that's what we did for two records with Marty. And when we started working with Ben Gross, we didn't really talk about it too much. We did record live together, all four of us, and you know, Glenn would sing, kind of scat sing some stuff, and but he would play bass on everything, and Dave and I played with Dean, and it was a great environment. By the way, we were at, in the south of France at La Fabrique, so it was really perfect for us to really be focused and play music all day, every day, without getting in a car, you know, having to drive anywhere. So we didn't really talk about the guitars. We probably assumed it would be the same way, and on some songs it is, but on other songs, maybe it might be me or David as the feature, and the other guitar is kind of tucked in the middle. David's guitar absolutely adds a flavor that is really a string that runs through the Dead Daisies. It's an aggressive, he's a very honest, you know, he's not trying to be anything more than a very basic rhythm player. You know, he's like, again, the way he plays is unique to him. He's a very aggressive, very honest guitar player, very, it's a big sound that he gets live. And so we wanted to capture that in the studio, and it was really cool, you know. So I would say, for example, we got a track, we would be recording together, and we would say, we got the drum track, that's it. If anybody made a mistake, you can go fix it, but we got the drum track. And then, so maybe I would go in the studio, I'd come into the studio from the tracking room, and start to fix my guitar, and then maybe Ben would say, hey, I really like that, can you double that now? So I would double my original tracking guitar, and with Glenn's bass, and it was like, wow, this sounds really good, but it really wouldn't sound as good as it did until David put his guitar on it, because the contrast of his playing and my playing together is really helps make it more unique. It just, when he put his guitar in, it made it have a little bit more of the massive Daisy sound. But as far as the guitar sound goes, both of us, he was playing through a Friedman BE-100.
Yeah.
And generally playing, he's got a couple of SGs, he's got a couple of Flying Vs, and it was generally one of those guitars. And I was, for the most part, playing a gold top Les Paul I brought over two amps. I had my, I brought a 68 super bass that had been tweaked a little bit by
Dave Friedman.
David, right? Yeah, Dave Friedman. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, I have a Marshall that I've had since I bought it in 1981 in Los Angeles at Guitar Center. It's a JMP, you know, what they call it. Master volume, and it had been modded by John Sur.
Okay.
And so I've always used a Samp on something on an album. And that was mostly what I used was, you know, my Marshalls. Mm. And when you're tracking rhythm guitars, a lot of times I might have an extra gain pedal for sometimes if I'm, you know, as I play through the song, I'd be like, this one thing that I'm doing, it really needs a little more balls to it. So I'd kick on the pedal for that. But for the most part, I really like the best when there's no pedals, just straight into the amp for tracking rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
If say there was a couple songs where I didn't really know what I was going to do as a solo, so I just was for fun tracking with the gain pedal and maybe a wah pedal, and I might try something in the solo section, and sometimes you get lucky, you know. So, but when I would double it, I would just double it clean with as little as possible.
I watch many videos of you playing live or recording in the studio, and it seems there is this mystery, and you have to tell me the secret, because you play most of the time a Les Paul, and you are able to stay in tune even though you do some crazy super wide bends, you know, and the Les Paul stays in tune. So what's the secret? Is that because of what you use, because your finger? How do you keep a Les Paul in tune, Doug? Tell me the secret. I want to know.
Okay. I don't, to be honest with you, I'm not sure I have the secret. I because there's plenty of times that I do pull it out of tune. But
okay.
I think it comes down to this, really. You got to make sure that your guitar is set up well. And after so many years of, like, people like you and I, we get comfortable doing it ourselves. But for someone who's maybe, you know, learning or something like that, you really need to make sure your guitar is set up. That means that the nut needs to be cut properly for mm-hmm. the strings so that they don't get stuck in there. Sometimes you'll buy a guitar and it'll be good in the store with these certain strings on it, but then you decide, hey, I want to put fatter strings on it to get a bigger, deeper sound and tune down. Well, when you do that, you got to have the nut adjusted as mm-hmm. well, because the strings are a different size. So, and then one of the most important things is proper stretching out of the strings, mm-hmm. because you can put a string on a guitar and kind of stretch it a little bit or play it for a while and figure, like, okay, it's going to settle in now. It never really sets in until I grab it like this and I kind of twist it all the way down, starting at the nut and pulling it like this and twisting it like this, so that I'm twisting the whole section, every section of the string.
Okay, through the whole length of the string.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can show you. Wait. So basically, I would start here. I would start here on the low string, and I would, I don't know if you can see, but I'm twisting it like this all the way down and kind of pulling it. And these lower strings, you know, you can do it. You know, you don't want to go crazy, but you just have to stretch it all the way down. As you get to the lighter strings, you got to go a little bit more gentle, because they will snap if you go too hard. But even down to the high E, let me see if I can.
Okay.
I'm basically doing this all the way down. And then I retune it and play and retune it and play. And then eventually, hopefully it stays in tune, you know. But the nut's got to be cut good. And make sure that you've, you know, one thing for Les Paul, sometimes the G string can be a little funny.
It's always the G string, yes.
Mm-hmm. With the intonation. So sometimes with this guitar, I might tune my low E string just a fraction flat. Because sometimes when you hit it, you know, it pulls it sharp. So I might just go just a fraction flat on that one. And a lot of times on the G string, I'll go just a fraction flat. When you're doing a major third, say an E with a major third, sometimes the major third is sharp. So if you go a little bit flat, you can kind of cheat it. And it helps. But it's, you know, with every guitar, it's a battle, and you have to figure out what works for every guitar. Stratocasters, same thing. They're with that a tremolo. Some people like it flat and hard, and some people like it floating.
Yeah,
I like it floating. Mm-hmm. That's easier for me to keep it in tune. And I read something the other day where Eddie Van Halen, he would keep his flat.
Yeah, always.
But he had his nut cut extra wide so that the strings had plenty of room, and he would put oil like three times before the show, and he would make sure that it was super greased up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it depends, you know, but that's one of the coolest things about guitars, is trying to figure out these types of situations, you know?
Yes, definitely.
Once you get it figured out, then you're like, okay, cool. What's the next thing to challenge?
Doug, it was really awesome to be able to have you on the show. So I really hope we will be able to do something. When you come to Paris, we will do a guitar in hand interview here at the showroom. As a word of conclusion, 2021 is right around the corner. What can we wish you for 2021?
Well, let's wish that we are making good progress on this pandemic so we can get back to live music, because it really is essential to everyone's good health, you know, being able to play music together and play music. I love to go to concerts, not concerts as much as I love to be able to go to a club and see a great guitar player play and get inspired. And then I do like to go to concerts when I have time, you know, if there's something I can, you know, just that a band that I enjoy is coming. So I really miss it. So I hope we get back to that. And I want to say thanks to all your listeners and watchers that support that we're all musicians and the support to each other means everything. So let's stay strong and we'll get through this and get back to rocking.
Yeah, and I see that you are supposed to be in concert on March 1st at the Trabendo in Paris. So again, let's cross finger and let's hope it's going to happen. Any news on that?
That one, I don't think is going to happen because we had planned to start a tour in February. You know, of course, we always wanted to be out there as soon as possible, but now it's looking more like because of the vaccines mm-hmm. that are starting to happen. I'm not sure if they're happening in France yet, but
yeah,
soon they will.
Yeah.
So, I hope in the next 2 months we'll start to see some really loosening of some of the locking down we have going right now, and that will certainly make people feel better and be able to play music together, at least with a couple guys in a room would be great, you know. And then maybe by the summertime,
okay,
there'll be, you know, some tours happening. So I just wish everybody a happy, healthy, and prosperous, but mostly healthy New Year.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you again very much for your time, Doug. And I wish you all the best. And again, congratulations.
Merci beaucoup. Sorry, buddy. Somebody keeps calling here.
No problem.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time and congratulations for releasing a great album. Really, so it's going to be released on January 22nd. Thank you,
yes,
Doug. Have
yes.
a merry, great New Year and see you hopefully in 2021.
Bonne nuit.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Bonne journée.
Okay.
Ciao.
Okay, bye-bye. Bonjour. Bonsoir. Okay, man.
Pour le prix d'un magazine, abonnez-vous à la chaîne Guitare pour accéder aux vidéos intégrales. For the price of a magazine, subscribe to The Guitar Channel to access the full videos.